Ed Mavoli had to go to the John. He looked furtively to the right and left, then he caught Marco's eye and made a desperate series of lifts with his eyebrows, combined with some compulsive face tics. Marco coughed. Yun Lo looked over at him serenely, then nodded. Marco went to Yun's side and whispered a message. Yun shouted a command in Chinese, and a man appeared in the open doorway at the back of the auditorium. Yun suggested that Mavoli follow that man, and he told Mavoli not to be embarrassed, because the ladies did not understand Chinese. Mavoli thanked him. Then he turned to the line of sitting soldiers and said, "Anybody else?" Bobby Lembeck joined him, and they left the room. Marco returned to his chair. Gomel demanded to know what the hell was going on, anyway. Yun Lo explained deadpan in Russian, and Gomel made an impatient, exasperated face. Yun Lo carried his thesis forward. Neurotics and psychotics, he told the group, are too easily canted into unpredictable patterns, and the constitutional psychopaths, those total waste products of all breeding, were too frivolously based. Of course, he explained, the psychotic group known as paranoiacs had always provided us with the great leaders of the world, and always would. That was a clinical historical fact. With their dedicated sense of personal mission, a condition that has been allowed to become tainted semantically, he pointed out, with the psychiatric label of megalomania. With their innate ability to falsify hampering conditions of the past, to prevent unwanted distortion of the future, with that relentless protective cunning that places the whole world in revolving turn into position as their enemies, paranoiacs simply had to be placed in the elite stock of any leader pool. Mavoli and Lembeck came back, picking their way carefully through the chairs and moving very properly, Mavoli leading. They climbed back upon the platform almost daintily, while the speaker and the audience waited politely. Mavoli inadvertently broke wind as he sat down. He excused himself with a startled exclamation and flushed with embarrassment before all those garden ladies. His consternation sent Gomel into barking laughter. Yun Lo waited icily until the commissar had finished his pleasure, whacking his packed thighs and wheezing, then pointing his stunted finger up at Mavoli on the platform while he guffawed helplessly. When the laughter finally subsided, Yun threw an aside at his countrymen in Chinese. They tittered like thlibii, which shut Gomel up. Yun Lo continued blandly. Although the paranoiacs make the great leaders, it is the resenters who make their best instruments, because the resenters, those men with cancer of the psyche, make the great assassins. His audience was listening intently again. It is difficult to define true resentment for you. The Spanish medical philosopher Dr. Gregorio Marañón described it as a passion of the mind, some blow of life which produces a sharp moan of protest when it is not transformed by the normal mental mechanism into ordinary resignation, ends by becoming the director of our slightest reactions. Raymond's mother helped to bring about his condition to the largest and most significant extent, for, in Andrew Salter's words, the human fish swim about at the bottom of the great ocean of atmosphere, and they develop psychic injuries as they collide with one another. Most mortal of all are the wounds gotten from the parent fish. It has been said, the Chinese doctor continued, that only the man who is capable of loving everything is capable of understanding everything. The resentful man is a human with the capacity for affection so poorly developed that his understanding for the motives of others very nearly does not exist. Yun Lo patted Raymond's shoulder sympathetically and smiled down at him regretfully. Raymond is a man of melancholic and reserved psychology. He is afflicted with total resentment. It is slowly fomenting within him before your eyes. Raymond's heart is arid. At the core of his defects is his concealed tendency to timidity, sexual and social, both of which are closely linked, which he hides behind that formidably severe and haughty cast of countenance. This weakness of will is compounded by his constant need to lean upon someone else's will. And now, at last, that has been taken care of for the rest of Raymond's life.
Has the man ever killed anyone? Berezovo asked loudly.
Have you ever murdered anyone, Raymond? Yun Lo asked the young man solicitously.
No, sir.
Have you ever killed anyone?
No, sir.
Not even in combat?
In combat, yes, sir. I think so, sir.
Thank you, Raymond. Dr. Maranyan tells us that resentment is entirely impersonal, as opposed to hatred, which has a strictly individual cast and presupposes a duel between the hater and the hated. The reaction of the resenter is directed against destiny.
The pace of Yunlo's voice slowed, and it had softened when he spoke again.
Pity Raymond, if you can. Beneath his sad and stony mask, wary and hypocritical, you must remember that his every act, every thought, and all of his ends are permeated with an indefinable bitterness. An infinite anguish must mark his life. He flees the world to find himself in solitude, and solitude terrifies him because it is too close to his despair. His soul has been rubbed to shreds between the ambivalence of wanting and not wanting, of being able and unable, of loving and hating. And as Dr. Maranyan has demonstrated, his feeling lives like two brothers, at one and the same time, Siamese twins and deadly enemies.
The commission stared at this dream by Lavrenti Beria, the perfectly prefabricated assassin, this bored, too handsome, blonde young man with the pointed chin and the pointed ears, whose mustard-colored eyes looked through them as a cat's would, and who would not be able to stop destroying once the instructions had been fed into him. All but four of them had had experience in one Soviet or another with the old-fashioned, wild-eyed, cause-torn name-killers of the domestic politics of the past 25 years, and every one of those had been a shaky 1,000-to-1 shot as far as being able to guarantee success. But here was Caesar's son to be sent into Caesar's chamber to kill Caesar. Steady, responsible, shock-proof assassins were needed at home, because assassination was a stratagem requiring secrecy and control. And if an assassination were not to be committed secretly, then it had to be arranged discreetly and smoothly, so that the ruling cliques realized that it was an occasion not to be advertised. If the assassin were to be used in the West, as this one would be, where sensationalism is not only desirable, but politically essential, the blow needed to be struck at exactly the right time and place, at a national emotional apogee, as it were, so that the selected messiah who would succeed the slain ruler could then defend all of his people from the threatening and monstrous element at whose doorstep the assassination of an authentic national hero could swiftly and effectively be laid. Petuzova was thinking of Yun Lo's proud claim of prolonging post-hypnotic amnesia into eternity. Petuzova had been life-trained in security work, particularly that having to do with Soviet security problems in North America, where this killer would operate. If a normally conditioned Anglo-Saxon could be taught to kill and kill, then to have no memory of having killed, or even of having had the thought of killing, he could feel no guilt. If he could feel no guilt, he could not fall into the trap of betraying fear of being caught. If he could not feel guilt or the fear of being caught, he would remain an outwardly normal, productive, sober, and respectful member of his community, so that, as Berezovo saw it, this killer was very close to being police-proof, and the method by which he was created must be very, very carefully controlled in its application to other men within the Soviet Union. Specifically, within Moscow. More specifically, within the Kremlin.